We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray.
Did you have like a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
To be honest, I would put myself in the same category as D-Wade.
Now Artest has jumped over the scorer's table. Artest is in the stands.
This man was a bona fide scrub. He can't play.
When I go to the writers to tell me who can guard in this league, I'll put a gun to my own head.
Welcome to the RotoWire NBA podcast, presented, as always, by DraftKings.com. It is Tuesday, November 20th, and if the NBA season ended today, the Clippers and the Grizzlies would be the top two seeds in the Western Conference, James.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's kind of every single team in the West, really, except for those two, has had their bumps in the road, you know, and the Clippers, I think, were kind of an obvious, like, sleeper, like, eight seed type of pick before the season. Like, you and I didn't go there, but, like, there were people that, like, thought that they could be in that mix for one of those playoff spots. I think I had the over on the Grizzlies at, like, 34 or 35 or whatever it was, but definitely didn't think that they were close to a viable playoff contender just based on the other teams out there. But I mean, they're from every Grizzlies game I've watched, which has actually been more than zero, they've looked really good defensively, and I think that is something that's pretty sustainable as long as they can stay healthy. They just make it really, really difficult for you with their, you know, four or five best players who are all above average defenders. And then the Clippers obviously just have so much more depth than everybody else. And the pieces seem to really fit. So, hats off to those teams. I don't know if they can keep it up, but they're playing really well right now.
It feels like we, over these last few weeks, have just like been like anointing different teams in the West. Like 2 weeks ago, I think it was New Orleans, we decided it was maybe the second best team in the West. And right now they're 10-7. They're in sixth. It was Portland last week. I mean, they're technically tied. The Clippers, the Grizzlies, and the Trailblazers are all 11-5 at the top of the West as of Tuesday morning. But by virtue of whatever tiebreakers the NBA uses, the Clippers are technically first. I think you put it pretty well in terms of the Clippers. Like, I wouldn't say you and I were down on the Clippers. Like, not many people really were, but it was more of a, this is a team that would probably be like the fifth, sixth, seven, maybe eight seed in the East.
I think they would have been the clear six seed, I think, going into the season, right?
Yeah,
like, I mean, them versus the Pacers, like, it's pretty pretty even right there.
I think 2 months ago I would have said the Pacers were a better team. Now it's looking like that it's a pretty close matchup. You know, I mean, I think the Clippers would solidly be in that like 4, 5, 6 area in the East.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you said, I mean, I think we looked at this team and it wasn't so much like a referendum on the Clippers as it was like the West was so deep that even the Clippers could put together as a very good year, you know, a year that in a normal Western Conference would maybe get you 45, 46 wins. But I think it was just going to be so deep of a conference that it was really hard to see them leapfrogging a team like New Orleans or Denver or even the Lakers. I'm still like right now on November 20th, if I said over under 8 seed for the Los Angeles Clippers, do they make the playoffs?
Man, that's tough.
It's a question on a lot of people's minds. So they're in first place, but they're only, you know, the 8 seed right now is 9-7. So it's a 2-game difference.
So I think that let's just go by the teams that are like out and that are probably going to get in. Like the Rockets are on the outside looking in. I think they get in.
Yep, I'm back in on the Rockets.
Let's see. The Spurs and the Jazz are both on the outside looking out. The T-Wolves are on the outside looking out. I think the Jazz end up with a better record than the Clippers, but I think the Clippers end up with a better record than the Spurs and the Timberwolves.
Is there any teams we can cross off in the West besides Phoenix? I'm getting close with Minnesota. I mean, I want to see how this plays out with Saric and Covington, but it's really tough for me to see them kind of getting back into the mix.
Minnesota's 7-2 at home. 0-8 on the road.
Aren't they defeated on the road? Yeah.
I mean, I can cross off the Mavericks and the Kings. I don't know if you can, but I don't even really care what their record is.
I had the Kings crossed off in August.
Okay, good. Sorry, Kings fans. So we can cross off the Suns, Mavericks, the Kings. I think we can cross off the Timberwolves too.
Yeah.
So that's,
I mean, as shaky as all the teams that you just mentioned, Houston, Spurs, Jazz, Lakers, even the Nuggets are 10-7 now. Like, Minnesota is still like a rung below them.
Can you cross off the Spurs?
No.
Okay.
8-8.
Well,
I mean, it's not looking good. They did give up 140 last night to the Pelicans. It's a weird Spurs team. Like, I feel like this is a more talented Spurs team than last year. I mean, obviously, I think the loss of Murray.
I don't.
The lack of depth at point guard is hurting them badly.
I think the no Murray, the no Danny Green, the no, like, they.
I just feel like Danny Green, like, numbers-wise, was not that good last year. Maybe he just has more value in the Spurs system than he does elsewhere.
Well, just the type of defenses you could play with Murray and Green versus the type of defenses you could play with, you know, what they're running out there right now.
I think the word you're looking for is Bryn Forbes.
Yeah, I mean, LaMarcus Aldridge just had a really bad start to the season, specifically from like a efficiency standpoint. Like, you sort of expect him to hit, you know,
he shoot at 42% from the
team. Yeah, you expect him to be up to like 47, 48, 49.
50. I mean, we had him projected at like a conservative 50, 50.
I mean, if he shoots below 45%, then he's just a straight up net negative when he's out there. So, I mean,
when it comes down to it, the Spurs are a bottom 10 defense in the NBA, which doesn't happen to the Spurs.
I think the only team that's in the bottom six right now of the West, Kings, Spurs, Jazz, Mavericks, Timberwolves, Suns, the only one of those teams that I am strongly not willing to write off is the Jazz. Like, it would be pretty easy for me to label those other five as teams that aren't going to make the playoffs right now. So that still means that one other team has to fall out.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You start looking at the top eight, and it's like, you know, I mean, you can, to me, the Clippers and the Grizzlies, which, you know, sit 1 and 2, are still the two shakiest teams out of those eight. And, you know, I mean, the way we're talking about this is, you know, a little bit hyperbolic in terms of, you know, it's like these teams are running away with the West right now. I mean, it is so bunched up. It is similar to last year. You know, I think last season, Golden State and Houston were kind of on their own level at the top. And then you had these eight or nine teams who were all separated by a couple games. Now it's just everybody in the West is separated by a couple games.
If I told you the Grizzlies, because to me the big thing with the Grizzlies and the Clippers is just health. If I told you both the Grizzlies and the Clippers have really, really good health the rest of the way with their key players, are you saying they're in or are you saying they're out? Because it's easy to just say, well, if Mike Conley misses time or if Marc Gasol misses time, the Grizzlies are going to fall out. But what if they don't? Like, I think that they are a really good team when they're fully healthy, but they have such a thin margin of error when it comes to injuries.
No, very true. I think that's more true even for Memphis. I mean, history suggests, basically the last decade of history, that if those two guys are healthy and they both play 70-plus games, the Grizzlies are a playoff team. And, you know, certainly the West maybe hasn't been quite this deep during the duration of that run, but it's almost Spurs like in some ways. I mean, like, Mike Conley's never even been an all-star. Like, there's really not a whole lot to suggest that, you know, like, numbers wise, like, you know, it's tough to quantify, I think, what he means to this team specifically. And it's showing, you know, yet again this year, despite the fact that, you know, he's putting up 20 points a game, a little under six assists, which, fine numbers. He's shooting 41% from the field, but they just find a way to make it work when those two guys are healthy. And we should say Marc Gasol has bounced back pretty nicely. I mean, I think last year, what they asked him to do, you know, with Conley out and with that season kind of going in the tank so quickly, he ended up not really playing the same way that we've seen, you know, hyper efficiently in previous years. He shot 42% from the field last year, 34% from three. Really wasn't getting the looks I think he wanted. Now he's back, you know, up 45% from the field, 41% from three. Scoring is actually down. But he's looked a lot better overall. So, I mean, to go back to your original question, I think if Gasol and Conley play 75 games, the Grizzlies probably get the 7 or the 8. But to me, that's still kind of a big if, because they don't have the depth that the Clippers do elsewhere. You know, I mean, their two guard and wing situation is still very iffy to me. Garrett Temple, I think, has been a nice addition for them. But you start looking beyond that, and, you know, Shelvin Mack is playing a lot of minutes. Dylan Brooks.
He's looked good at times. Yeah. Shelvin Mack's looked good at times.
Shelvin Mack is averaging 10 or 11 points a game and shooting over 50% from the field.
So I really just think it's going to come down to health, and I think you can go right on down the line. Like, I mean, we've really never seen Damian Lillard miss significant time, but, like, obviously that would be big for the Blazers. But, like, if Russ or PG miss time, the Thunder are going to have a hard time getting in. If, if Jokic or several of the Nuggets wings miss time, they're going to be in trouble. Obviously, if Anthony Davis misses even just like 8 games between now and the end of the season, that might be enough to knock them out of the playoffs.
3 quarters between now and the end of the season, it's over.
The Lakers are probably the toughest team to really kind of figure out of all these teams for me. But like the Rockets, I think they're going to kind of cruise to a playoff spot now. But if for whatever reason, Harden misses a couple weeks and Chris Paul misses like a month, and that might not be the case. The Jazz really can't afford any sort of setbacks between here and the end of the season. So I really think health could just dictate it. And like, we still haven't seen Danilo Gallinari miss any time this season for the Clippers. That sort of always happens. I mean, with, that's not even an exaggeration. He pretty much always misses 30 plus games at some point. So
lock it in.
It really might just come down to who has the most health or the best health the rest of the way between these 11 or so teams that are legitimate playoff contenders.
So to wrap up the West, like we said, 11-5 currently gets you first place in the West. 3-13 is the basement. But the next worst record is 7-10. So you're really only looking at a pretty minuscule, is at four and a half games, I think, separate first and 14th. Is that more reflective of some of these teams like the Spurs, like the Jazz, Minnesota probably belongs in that category, starting more slowly than we expected, not playing as well as we expected? Or is it more of a reflection on the West is just as deep as we thought and everybody's just beating each other up night to night?
I think it's reflective of the teams with the absolute most talent having sort of the biggest issues early on, with whether it's just personnel or injuries. Like the Warriors, the Rockets, the Suns. the Jazz are all off to way worse starts than anyone would have expected, and then the teams with kind of the continuity, like the Blazers, the Grizzlies, the Clippers, that were kind of thought of more in that sort of 7 seed to like 11th best record in the West type of range, they've had just perfect starts to the season. So it's just everything's just really bunched up because the teams that had the potential to separate themselves have failed to do so, and the teams that people were kind of sleeping on have gotten off to better starts than anyone expected.
We're in the midst of week 6 of the fantasy basketball season, and once again we've partnered with DraftKings to bring you RotoWire 6 month memberships for free. Here's how it works. Go to rotowire.com /DraftKings. That's rotowire.com/DraftKings. Sign up for a new account on DraftKings and make a $10 deposit. That's right. You'll get 6 months of access to all the tools and sports on rotowire.com, which includes our DFS lineup optimizers, weekly rankings, premium articles, full season draft software, and much, much more. And again, that's for all sports, not just NBA. You get all that for $10, which you can then enter into contests on DraftKings to win even more money. If you want access right away, go to rotowire.com/DraftKings and follow the instructions. Again, that's rotowire.com/DraftKings. Eligibility restrictions apply. New DraftKings users only. See DraftKings.com for details. Patino watch. Steve Kerr?
No. I think it... He like blatantly lied in front of the camera like the other day, which might be a first for him, where like someone asked him like, "Have you guys talk about like Durant's impending free agency?" He was like, "No, we never.
Who's free agency?
We never talk about that.
Not have that guy locked up."
that was interesting to see, but no, I mean, I think he
gets away with more than any other coach.
He's fine. What do you mean?
Like, he can just do whatever he wants. Like, there's nobody calls him on anything. Maybe that just comes with winning 3 titles. And
I mean, what would you call him on other than his horrific center rotations?
Stuff like this.
Well, what's he supposed to do? Like, what's he supposed to do, though?
Be honest.
Like, yeah, we talk about it all the time.
Yeah,
it's brutal.
Talk about it on the bench during that Clippers game last week.
But like his job, like any coach's job, yeah, there is to try to like stop that from like spiraling even further out of control. Like, if he says anything other than that, then it just turns into like 2 more days worth of story there. I mean, he's not quite on Patino watch. Let's just say that
if they lose tomorrow against OKC, still no Steph. This is the great, like, I wish this game was in OKC so bad. It's at Golden State, but this would have been like the crown jewel of all these Russ Durant matchups. No Curry.
I mean, we could have had Malice at the Palace 2.0.
Well, we sure could have. I mean, I was going to wait till the end to bring this up, but yesterday was the 14-year anniversary of Malice at the Palace. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention it at this point.
Durant and Draymond Green just like in the stands, like going after
each other. Do you think we'll ever see anything worse than that? I can't imagine we will.
No.
I rewatched.
There's too much to lose if you're a player,
right,
and you were to do that again. But,
well, what's strange is like it happened in 04, obviously, and it involved two very good teams, like arguably the two best teams in the league.
I remember the Pacers, people, like, this should never be forgotten with regard to the Malice of the Palace. The Pacers that year, like, they were legitimately my pick to win the NBA Finals that year. Like, they were loaded, and like, so that there's no kind of understanding just how talented that Pacers team was prior to all the fallout from Malice at the Palace.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it'd be one thing if the Kings and the Suns got into a fight, you know, like, that's when you talk about guys with nothing to lose. Like, that would happen. Like,
sure.
You know, this was an accomplished, veteran-laden Pistons team.
Yeah.
You know, two very respected, you know, rosters and organizations that went at it. I mean, obviously the NBA cracked down pretty heavily after that. I don't think that's what dissuades anybody from getting into an argument like that. It was just like the confluence of personalities on the court. I mean, like, if you could pick two people to spark a brawl, Ben Wallace and Ron Artest were probably in the top five in the league at that time. Rasheed Wallace being involved, Jermaine O'Neal, Stephen Jackson, Jamal Tinsley. Like, you're not.
We just don't even have. We don't have a four guys like that that could possibly be playing in the same game together anymore.
No, those guys have been, this is not even a joke, like those guys have been completely phased out of the league.
Yeah.
When Matt Barnes retired, that might, he might have been the last one.
They've been doing a really good job at the rookie symposium.
Yeah, too good of a job. I want more of these guys in the league. Like, there needs to, like, bring like Junkyard Dog and Charles Oakley in to like teach some of these guys to kind of breed the next generation of Ron Artests.
I don't think we're going to see something like that again. That's going to be a fun game. I don't really care for watching the Thunder play, but I also, I mean, the Warriors aren't that fun to watch play when Steph's out. So it's going to be kind of a slog, I think, relative to the amount of talent involved.
So Shannon, we were just talking about Malice at the Palace. You're a Pistons fan. You're older than me, so you probably remembered a lot more. What was that like as a Pistons fan in 2004?
It was amazing. I was at a college party, and we were watching the Pistons game when it happened, and it was shocking. And at first, we thought it was cool, and then it was horrible, because that's just bad. It can't happen. But, yeah, it was the one of the weirdest sports nights, like watching sports of my life.
Yeah, and that was even like pre like Twitter and all that stuff, and it was still like everyone was talking about it like that very night. You know,
my mom knew about it. Like that's kind of back then. That's how I judged when something was a big deal. Like when my mom would sit me down and like, we need to talk about what happened in that game you were watching last night.
It was like that, and like the Tiger Woods, like I remember that was like a Thanksgiving dinner like conversation where people were talking about like, do you see what happened with Tiger Woods? Yeah. Like really kind of
that Tiger Woods. Yeah, that one. Well, Malice at the Palace also happened 6 days before Thanksgiving, so it was perfectly timed for, you know, holiday banter.
Perfectly timed for family holiday banter.
I went back yesterday and rewatched like the original footage, you know, the tapes. And there were like five different high points of Malice at the Palace. I mean, there's like the most iconic shot, you know, is obviously Artest laying on the scorer's table, getting the drink thrown on him. That's not even the craziest part. Like Jermaine O'Neal.
That's my favorite. My favorite part is Jermaine O'Neal just completely leveling the guy that looks like Turtle from Entourage.
Yes,
like,
look, it very well may have been Turtle from Entourage. He was saying something to him. Jermaine O'Neal sprints full speed down the sideline and like just at the last second slips. And if he didn't slip, that guy would probably not still be with us.
Right.
Still clocks him in the face, caught him pretty good, but really probably only got like 70% of what he wanted.
That was a big swing.
Yeah. There's another one where Ron Artest is like face to face with another Pistons fan who kind of looks like Turtle. And this guy is like really like right in Artest's face, like challenging him, somehow thinking that the guy who just got out of the crowd wasn't going to punch him. He like gives Artest a little shove. Artest obviously doesn't move. Just winds up, clocks him in the face. Guy goes down. His friend looks at Artest like, "What the hell, man?"
Yeah, it was a big night for short, husky, drunk fans.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not really too worried about the Warriors. I don't think anybody is. I think that I think Draymond and Durant could continue going at it throughout the year, and at the end of the day, it really wouldn't matter.
No, I don't think so either. I think that they could be vulnerable if they're dealing with injuries in the postseason, but if they are fully healthy, specifically with Steph. I mean, they could get beat by any number of teams, I think, in a postseason series if Steph isn't healthy. But if they're fully healthy, they're going to win the title.
Well, the worst thing to come out of this, I think, for Durant is that they've lost without Steph. And like, I don't think this should be really a referendum on Durant necessarily. But, you know, I think there's kind of been this like side debate, mostly between Warriors fans, I think, of like who's more important, who's the better player. And I would still take Durant. I mean, I think it's really, really close, and it that might change like night to night. But them
I think there's just two distinctions. There's who, like, if you're just thinking like a game of like one on one, or even just like sort of pick up like in like a Drew League type setting, you take Durant. But I honestly truly believe that Steph is more important in terms of wins and losses to this team than Durant is.
Durant's a better basketball player. Steph Curry is a more valuable NBA player.
Yes, I think that's accurate.
I think that's a correct take.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, the Warriors going, what, 1-4 now? 1-3 without Steph isn't exactly a great look for KD.
No, it's entertaining to watch, I guess, and this will be a... I think almost the best case scenario in this game is the Thunder win and Westbrook has a big game, but it's like close enough that he's still fired up after the game. Yes. that there's a bunch of really, you know, celebration and like really like big time hugs and big time like elbow pounds on the mm-hmm. court, and like it, everyone's just really fired up, and then the sad Warriors like walk away. Like that probably makes for the best like TV if like the yeah. Thunder sort of act like they just won the NBA Finals after right. that game. But
it's impressive that these matchups, I mean, we're going on year three of this now, and Russ still gets up for these games. You know, like when LeBron went back to Cleveland for
he doesn't have anything else time. To get up for.
Yeah, right. Like most of these type of, you know, rivalries,
his biggest games of the year. Like he's not going to play any big games.
Yeah, I think this has all the makings of like a Russell Westbrook 45, 15, and 10 game, but he shoots like 14 of 41 from the field and has like 8 turnovers, but the Thunder somehow win.
Right. That's the ideal scenario.
Yeah, I think the NBA should move this game to OKC.
Were we going to talk?
Wildfires.
They should flex it to OKC. Were we going to talk Wizards at all, or is that like not a?
Yeah, as you can see here on the document, it says Wizards.
Okay. The doc.
I don't really. I mean, I just want to address the report from last night that John Wall used the F word,
right?
Directed at his head coach.
He cursed at his head coach.
He used a curse word
in a practice setting.
Yeah, I don't like that. Wasn't even news to me. Like it would have been news. It would have been bigger news if Woj came out and said that John Wall had never sworn at Scott
Brooks. It's really that's kind of the big bombshell here is that this is the first time this year that he said that to Scott.
It took 15 games for him to say "F you" to Scott Brooks.
Yeah, but like the way more fascinating thing is just like. Now they're quote unquote like open to trading John Wall. It's like, yeah, of course you are. Them being open to trading Bradley Beal is relatively newsworthy and kind of an interesting mm-hmm. domino that could fall because he's just such a perfect fit on all the good teams, right? Because his skills translate perfectly into a playoff setting. So if a good team adds him and doesn't have to give up a ton of now value to do so, then that's a big piece.
Well, right. And I think it helps these theoretical good teams that might want to add Brad Beal that the Wizards are a disaster. Like the more the Wizards lose and fall out of playoff contention, the more likely it is that they want future pieces, which mm-hmm. means that you're not giving up, you know, if you're the Bucks, for example, you know, they like, the Wizards wouldn't want Chris Middleton, who's expiring this year. You know, like that.
There's a lot of teams you can just rule out.
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, that's like, not the greatest example by any means. But, like, they don't want a Chris Middleton type piece. You know, they want a future piece.
But so the reason I don't think anything's going to get done with Brad Beal, like, even in the next, like, 2 months, just because, obviously, like, if you're running the Wizards and you're in charge of kind of embarking on this rebuild / teardown, you want to trade Otto Porter and John Wall before you trade Brad Beal. Like it just, that's how it would work, right? Like you want to see if you can possibly unload John Wall first and foremost, like whatever it takes, get him off the books. And then you kind of see what happens. Like after you move him, after you move Otto Porter, are those straight up salary dumps? Are you able to get like a nice piece you like back maybe in the Otto Porter deal? And then maybe you don't even trade Brad Beal. Like if you can get, once you see what happens with those two trades, then it kind of lets you know whether you have to trade Brad Beal or not, or whether you can feasibly try to build around him still. But trading Bradley Beal first just kind of gives you zero leverage at all with any sort of John Wall or Otto Porter mm-hmm. trade. Not that you really have any to begin with the Wall one, but like Otto Porter, at least like if you trade him now, it might not necessarily have to be a straight up salary dump. Whereas if you've already traded Bradley Beal, teams just really have no incentive to offer you much of anything for him. So I don't see Bradley Beal getting traded before the deadline, just because I think that it makes sense to kind of unload the less desirable pieces first. But maybe they just come to a conclusion that they can't unload those guys and that Bradley Beal is the only one they can move. And it would make sense to move him sooner than later in that case.
The Wizards, to me, don't deserve the benefit of the doubt when it comes to stuff like this. You know, I mean, like, I'm not just going to assume they're going to make the right decision. But, you know, I mean, we'll see. I think a lot of it with Beal depends on what's being offered, which is a bit of a cop-out answer. But if the Lakers get desperate, if they're sitting at 25 and 25 around the trade deadline and they feel like they need to offer Brandon Ingram or Kuzma or something like that. You know, I think maybe that's a deal that Washington just kind of has to pounce on because, you know, you're not going to do better. We'll see. I mean, I think ideally you do trade Wall, but I mean, I was talking to Shannon, who just made that cameo earlier last night about this. And he, you know, as a Pistons fan was like, you know, I'll take him, you know, like we have nowhere else to go. You know, it's going to take a team like Detroit, which basically already did this with Blake Griffin, you know, saying like we're looking at our avenues to get free agents. You know, we're not a destination. We don't have a ton of cap room. This is the only way we're going to acquire someone like John Wall, who, you know, with his warts is still a pretty good player. Obviously, the contract, you know, is going to become more and more of an issue. But there are certain teams out there that just don't have paths to acquire players like that. And those, I think, are the teams that Washington's going to have to target.
Yeah, so other than the Lakers, is there another obvious team that has the need and the multiple young pieces? Because I don't think there's any team that just has, like, unless, like, the Celtics were willing to make Tatum available, which they won't be.
Jaylen Brown?
Like, is there another team out there that has the multiple young pieces to put together a competitive offer? I guess the Celtics are probably the next most obvious team.
Well, that's the thing. You kind of want to start that bidding war, I think. You know, you want the Celtics to be bidding against the Lakers for someone like Beal. I mean, it's a total opposite conversation as we just had about Wall. Like, with Wall, you almost have to talk about him as a salary dump, even though he's a good player. But, I mean, Beal, you know, I mean, I think the teams that would make a lot of sense and would want him just don't necessarily have the right assets. You know, Milwaukee is one we talked about. Like, I mean, Toronto has a lot of pieces, but I don't know which of those you're willing to give up have to give up multiple.
The problem is the other problem with like a team like Toronto is Bradley Beal's contract is it's very favorable for a team right now, just given the current financial climate. But for like a team like the Raptors, the young pieces you'd probably be willing to include are guys like OG Anunoby, guys like maybe Pascal Siakam. Those guys barely make anything compared to Bradley Beal. Right. So it's just tough to kind of structure a deal that makes sense, which is why the Lakers actually do make sense, because all of their Ingram and Ball specifically make enough money because they were high enough draft picks that if you combine them, you can make a deal that works.
Yeah, I mean, a 2-for-1 for a team like the Lakers or a team like the Celtics, who kind of have too many guys, would make some sense. I mean, you can look to the West. I mean, I think I'm sure Houston would love to have him. I don't know if a package centered around Eric Griffin or Eric Gordon.
I just don't think they, because like to me, Bradley Beal's like at least 2 times more desirable of an asset than Jimmy Butler was. Probably more like 3 times more desirable, just given the length of team control. Yeah. And I just think he's a better fit as a supporting piece on some of these teams than Jimmy Butler would have been. Like a team like the Nuggets might have the pieces, but he doesn't really fit. Like they kind of already have their Bradley Beals. Like the Clippers would love to trade for him, but they don't have that one asset that can really headline a Bradley Beal deal. You know, I just don't, there's just not a ton of other options. I think you're really talking about the Celtics and the Lakers as just the teams that could pull it off. And like, I want to ask you, as someone that has interest in how good the Lakers do this season, like how big of a package would it have to be for you to not want to pull the trigger when you're just talking about a combination of young players going back to the Wizards for Bradley Beal? Like,
so what would scare me most about that as a Lakers fan for the last four months or so now, what would scare me most is that you're cashing in your chips too early with Anthony Davis potentially becoming available. And I think that's what's going to maybe be on the mind of the Lakers and the Celtics, two teams that I think are probably leading the charge in terms of, you know, projected to be in on Davis. Like, Beal's a really good player. It would be very representative of what LeBron teams have done in the past, is kind of trade long-term viability for short-term help. And certainly Bradley Beal is a way better player than Rodney Hood or Jordan Clarkson or Isaiah Thomas or whoever they've traded for in the past. But if you're giving up, like, let's say Ingram's included, you know, if you want to get in on Davis, that means you're giving up pretty much the rest of whatever young assets you have left. I mean, that's going to take theoretically Josh Hart and Kyle Kuzma, you know, if Ingram's gone in this deal. Like, to me, you know, you're really going all in on kind of your backup choice. But at the same time, you know, if you don't pull the trigger on Beal, he goes somewhere else, and all of a sudden you don't get Davis, then, you know, for the second straight year, you're kind of left with nothing. So it's a tough spot. I mean, I think the Lakers will certainly poke around. I also think they're not going to be willing to just go all in for Brad Beal like they would be for Anthony Davis.
The Anthony Davis thing is just weird to me because I don't see any way that the Pelicans accept defeat with regard to him prior to, like, the earliest I could see them trading him is the deadline before his walk.
That I do agree with. It's starting to get talked about as if it's an inevitability and as if he's almost said, like, I'm leaving. He's never said that. I mean, if you're the Pelicans, you have to take this as long as you can.
Yeah,
until he gives you a definitive, I'm not coming back, you have to hope he's coming back.
Especially since he's a good enough player that, like, you could go to multiple Western Conference finals with him before he's a free agent. And, you know, who knows, like, at that point, whether or not that sways him into, like, liking the players he's playing with. But, like, he's good enough right now to carry a team to the conference finals. So I get wanting to hold your chips for Davis. I sort of have a feeling that, you know, he might just go to the Lakers as a free agent. Like, I mean, I think that's the sort of dream scenario for them. And they don't have to give up assets to get him. I mean,
but LeBron's like coming up on 36 at that point, you know, like they want this done now.
Sure. But they're not going to get it done now. Soonest they can get Anthony Davis is maybe a half season before he's a free agent. So,
So we're talking next deadline.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think Bradley Beal would just be, you know, he's kind of in that he's not as good as like prime Wade. Prior to Kyrie hitting that shot in game 7, I would say that he's right there with where Kyrie was when he was with the Cavs. But then Kyrie hits that shot and he kind of gets thought of differently. But I mean, he's right there sort of to me with like prime Bosh in terms of just how much he helps you win in a postseason series. So I just think that there's a very, very short list of players LeBron's played with that are better than Bradley Beal is right now.
No, I agree. I mean, I think you said it best right away. You know, I mean, all 30 teams, including the Wizards, you know, want to keep this guy. Like, there's not a team out there that would say, you know, for the right price, we don't want Bradley Beal on our team. Mm-hmm. On the other end of the spectrum, Markelle Fultz is taking a week off. He's meeting with some sort of specialist doctor man next week to look into potential issues with his shoulder. Very unclear at this point if this is some sort of posturing. He only played, I think, 7 minutes in their game last night. TJ McConnell, you know, ended up playing a lot of minutes in the second half of that game, basically taking over his spot. Landry Shamet has kind of emerged as another option. They're playing over Fultz. So it seems like a combination of maybe there is actually something wrong and some frustration, you know, in the wake of this Jimmy Butler trade. But we're not going to see Fultz now for a few more games. I don't know where this goes next. Nothing would surprise me. I mean, we've talked about Fultz extensively on this podcast, and it just seems like week by week, his value just continues to plummet.
Yeah, I mean, this is probably a decent thing for the Sixers in the short term, just in terms of how they're going to play on the court, but awful for them in terms of trying to trade him. And, you know, maybe other teams just had zero interest in taking him on at the time of the Jimmy Butler trade, and they just couldn't have moved him. But like, just the idea of them trading him right now, even for like Terrence Ross, like I suggested, seems like it would be just a big time coup by the Sixers, you know.
magic hang up the phone. You want us to give you Terrence Ross?
Yeah, it's bizarre.
It is. There's no other way to put it. It's a 30 for 30 waiting to happen is the way I keep thinking about it. You know, it just doesn't seem like it's getting better. I don't know. I mean, the best case scenario right now, I guess, is he goes to this doctor next week and they find out, hey, you have a nerve issue, and that's why your free throw is looking like a Charles Barkley golf swing right now. So I think like that's you kind of want there to be a medical explanation if you're the Sixers, right? Because then you can, for your own comfort or for his trade value, you can say like, hey, you know, once he gets this taken care of, he'll be back.
I mean, I don't think that there's a I don't think there's any scenario that helps his trade value other than him playing in games and looking better. Like,
well, yeah, of course.
Like, if, you know, I mean,
I think you would rather there be some sort of medical explanation than none at all.
Well, you could make up a medical explanation.
They already did. That was all last year. It didn't work. I'm trying it again.
Breaking news, James Wiseman committed to the Memphis Tigers. So.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Saw that one coming.
Go Memphis.
I don't know if I mentioned this to you or not, but a couple weeks ago I was listening to the CBS College Basketball Pod, which I know you and I both like. And I think it was Gary Parrish noted that, like, John Calipari over the past, like, 6 months has gone to, like, extensive lengths to try to get James Wiseman out of the city of Memphis. Like, right. He was trying to, like, arrange for him to go play his senior year in Las Vegas,
right,
just to keep him away from Penny and basically avoid this exact situation. But, I mean, congrats to you as the biggest Penny fan I know, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, congrats to me.
If you don't know who James Wiseman is, number one player in the class of 2019, I would say if somebody was putting together a 2020 mock draft, he'd probably be number one right now. So pretty big get for the University of Memphis.
I used to be a big Arizona basketball fan.
Wait, what? Is that over?
The amount of turmoil they've been through recently. I haven't announced this on the show yet. Mm-hmm. The Memphis Tigers are, ever since Penny took over, it just seemed like an obvious sort of stepping stone for me to jump off one sinking ship and jump onto one rising ship. And this is going to be...
I think we should go back to Memphis State.
It's going to be... I'd love that. They're going to be a... legitimate, like, they're going to enter next year as a top 10 team, maybe a top 5 team, so that should be a good time.
They are going to be very loaded very quickly in a conference that for them should be pretty winnable. I think it's going to look a lot like it did 10 years ago when Calipari was there, you know, in the short term at least. Do you want to talk about the Celtics? Does that interest you at all? They lost again last night.
I think that we should transition to the fourth best player in the Eastern Conference, because I think that kind of ties in.
Sure, fair enough. Okay, well, I have some fill in the blanks for you. I'll start with this one. Assuming some combination of Kawhi, Giannis, and Embiid are 1, 2, and 3, the next best player in the East is...
All right, and I said I kind of made you include Embiid. It originally was just going to be Kawhi and Giannis, and I was just like, well, it's Embiid.
Yeah, you're right. Embiid has clearly solidified himself as a top three guy.
This is just a really, really, really tough question. I could hear arguments for four players. I'm going to go with Jimmy Butler.
Well, who are the four players?
Jimmy Butler, Kyrie Irving, Kemba Walker, and Victor Oladipo.
Not Ben Simmons.
No.
Okay.
And I would have said Ben Simmons before the year. I just...
Dwight Howard? Brad Beal?
No, I think these are players who, either from past performance or performance this year, deserve to be in this conversation ahead of those other guys. Okay. And I think Jimmy Butler, it's just going to be really tough to see how... I don't think the pieces fit all that well right now in Philly, as we've talked about quite a bit over the past couple weeks. But I would still, of those guys, I think that he contributes to winning more than the other guys. Okay. I think it's just so close, though. I wouldn't fault anyone for picking any of those other three. But I think that those are the kind of clear four guys in this conversation.
I think you're right. On a single season basis, like just for the rest of this year, I think there's an argument to be made for Butler, certainly. I don't know if I'm trying to think if there's anyone else I would add in. I mean, Colin Sexton's looked pretty good these last couple weeks, so I don't think he's quite there. We should mention Trae Young had 17 assists last night. He's not in this conversation, but that's a lot of assists.
I mean, the guy's sort of he's not in this conversation.
Just want to clear that up.
You know, I just think the rest of the guys are kind of in a tier down, like Chris Middleton, Blake Griffin, both having good seasons. Like, but those guys aren't in this conversation.
Drummond.
Drummond.
That was good.
I think in like a year, Josh Richardson could be in this conversation. I think if he'd never gotten hurt, I think in a year, Caris LeVert could be in this conversation. But we're just talking right now.
I like Josh Richardson. I think he's starting to become maybe a little overvalued. Like his profile has been raised by like the Heat not being willing to give him up for Jimmy Butler.
Think how many like casual NBA fans didn't know who Josh Richardson was.
Still don't know.
Yeah, probably still don't know.
Like, Jason Richardson, you mean?
Wait, yeah, you mean...
Is that Jason's
Jerry? I loved him in the dunk contest. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I have a few more fill-in-the-blanks for you.
What's yours?
I think right away I would have said Victor Oladipo, but there's certainly an argument to be made for Butler. I watched Kyrie put, what was it, 43 on the Raptors the other night, and nobody can really match him in terms of point guards and shot making.
Did you watch Kemba Walker last night?
I did. And well, we were talking about this, it was the whatever the ESPN podcast is called now.
It's got a terrible name, but it's a good podcast.
Yeah, great podcast. And Tim Bontemps, you know, kind of out of nowhere was just like, I think Kemba Walker is a better player than Kyrie Irving. And that drew some laughs from the panel. I think Kyrie's better. I think it's pretty close. It's much closer than I would like to admit. And there are certainly nights, last night being one of them, where Kemba Walker is the better player.
Yeah, I think this is kind of hard to sort of it's impossible to quantify. I think Kyrie's a better fit on the Celtics than Walker would be, but I think Walker is lifting this Hornets team to places Kyrie wouldn't be able to lift them.
Well, like, that was kind of Bontemps' argument, was like, switch those two guys. Like, does Kyrie make this Hornets team a 50-win team?
I think Kyrie puts up crazy numbers on this Hornets team, but I don't think he helps them win as many games as Walker helps them win. But, like, on that elite sort of stage of, like, a team that's got NBA Finals aspirations, I'd rather have Kyrie just because I've sort of seen it before. But, like, the idea that Kemba Walker would be scared of like the moment or wouldn't make big shots. I mean, we've seen him. I mean, I can remember him hitting as many big shots when you go all the way back to college as I can, like almost anyone in the NBA, save like the top three or four guys. So I think the idea that he wouldn't be able to handle a big stage is flawed, but just the fact that we've sort of seen Kyrie and not even like hit shots like that one in game seven, but just the ease of which Kyrie can get his shots in the playoffs is something that you kind of have to see it to sort of buy into it with a guy like Kemba. I think it's possible that he could do it, but I think that, what he's done with this Hornets team, which is just kind of if you take him off this team, I mean, it's one of the worst teams in the league. Yeah. Like he just makes everyone around him better in a way that I don't think Kyrie would be doing if they switch spots.
James, did you know that 2/3 of men lose their hair by age 35?
I did not know that.
Okay. Well, if you start to notice hair loss, it's not too late. I have a couple more questions for you. Do you want a bald spot to pop up or do you want to do something about it first?
I'd much rather do something about it first.
Do you want your hairline to recede or do you want to do something about it first?
I would probably want to do something about it first.
Okay, you would. All right. Well, luckily there's 4hims.com, your one-stop shop for hair loss, skin care, and sexual wellness for men. This is not some sort of sketchy product you can pick up at a Quick Trip. Nothing against Quick Trip. I love Quick Trip, but, you know, sometimes
I'm not going there for my hair loss treatment.
No, certainly not. I'm going there to get gas. Yeah, that's what I'm going there for. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss. No waiting room, no awkward in-person doctor visits. Just go to 4hims.com, answer a few quick questions, just a couple guy questions. Have a real doctor review your answers to get you the right prescription. 4hims will then send the products directly and discreetly, James, right to your door. Order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 while supplies last. You can see the website for full details. This is something that would cost hundreds or even thousands of dollars at a pharmacy. Again, to order now, just go to 4hims.com and use our URL, 4hims.com/RWBasketball. That's FORHIMS.com/RWBasketball. 4hims.com/RWBasketball. I have a couple more fill-in-the-blanks for you, and then we'll do some prospect stuff quick and get out of here. Donovan Mitchell is a top blank player in the league. Looking for a number here.
Yep.
Not basketball player.
All right. I'm going to say 30.
Is that a larger number than you would have said 2 months ago?
Yes. Mm-hmm. By about 10 spots.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I'm not going to ask you to list the 29 guys who might be ahead of him, but I mean,
closer to 35 than 25.
I would like to say I'm still very high on Donovan Mitchell. I think you probably are too, but he's in like my top five of guys who I expected to look a lot better through the first 15 or so games of the year. I mean, Tatum's certainly on that list as well. But he
all Ben Simmons too. All three of those guys are having the dreaded sophomore slump.
Yeah, which I really didn't see this coming for any of them.
I didn't either,
like at all. I thought Ben Simmons was just going to come back and be like an MVP candidate, honestly. And he's been like they've all been good, you know, by second year player standards. But I think they were almost too good as rookies that they maybe set the bar a little too high.
I'm going to throw in a little fantasy nugget for the listeners.
I'll sleep this out.
I offered Ben Simmons for Luka Doncic in the RotoWire staff keeper league. Contracts are fairly similar, and was rebuffed. So
who would have saw that coming?
I mean, maybe that says more about Doncic than it does Simmons, but I feel like before the season, that would have been a laughable thing to have get denied, but that's kind of where we're at right now.
The team in the Western Conference with the best chance to beat the Golden State Warriors is?
I'm sticking with the Pelicans. I think that they, if they're, you know, fully healthy in the playoffs, I think that they are going to be a really, really tough out. I think Anthony Davis might be the best player in that series, which I don't think any other team in the West has a player that they can really say that about other than the Lakers. And I just don't see them being in that kind of tier in terms of hanging with the Warriors. I think Drew Holiday is one of the, maybe the best option to put on either Clay or Steph to slow them down in a series. I think they just have a lot of interesting pieces, and it's kind of just the Anthony Davis bet. Mm-hmm. Like, could he average like 41 points per game in that series? Possibly.
Sure could. This is maybe an argument for an entirely like separate podcast, but I think there's a case to be made that right now, like the top tier of the league is as good as it's ever been. I mean, if you just want to do like the top five players, which I mean, I don't, you know, that list is even up for debate, but right. LeBron, Durant, Curry, Davis, Giannis, and like Kawhi is maybe number six.
Right.
And we're talking like the reigning MVP is.
We're not even talking about Harden. We're not talking about Embiid, like
Russ,
Butler.
I mean, it's unbelievable. I think whatever order you put those top five, I think you'd be very hard pressed to go back and find a better.
Even like even just that top six, I would say like that six.
And that doesn't even include Harden.
Right.
Who had arguably the best offensive season ever last year.
There's never been a time in NBA history where James Harden would have been the seventh best player.
Right, that's a very good way to put it. I mean, even someone, I mean, somebody could make the case that.
Or whoever you want to say, if that seven is the seventh best player, that
even Embiid,
would be.
Like,
yeah.
Embiid is like probably number like 9 or 10 right now. There's not any other time in history that guy would be 9 or 10.
I mean, there were plenty of times within the past like 20 years where that guy would have been in the top two, you know?
Yeah, I mean, you go back to like 07.
Those like Kobe, like Nash MVP years, like that. Ugh. Like Embiid, better.
Steve Nash would have been the 50th best player in the league during his MVP
year. How dare you? Adjust for pace.
Okay. The player that the general public is down on, but you still believe in is?
I'm going to say Jamal Murray. I think that's cheating a little. I think that anyone that's down on Jamal Murray is way off base, whereas there's other guys where I think it's kind of more obvious that people are down on them. But Jamal Murray, okay. I think, is just kind of, there's been some growing pains this year. Obviously, the incident with Mike Malone. But I still think like a year from now, we'll be talking about Jamal Murray as one of the best young players in the league.
Okay, fair enough. The bad team with the brightest future is?
The Dallas Mavericks.
Dallas Mavericks, and that is pretty much solely because of Luka Doncic?
Yes, they have the best young player.
Okay. There's an argument to be made for the Suns, but at some point you have to see results. I mean, we're going on, what, year three or four?
I don't think any of their good players are winning players, other than, McCall Bridges.
Like, they have, the best collection of, fun young players who just don't contribute to wins.
Right. Like, Devin Booker and DeAndre Ayton, that's just going to be such a kind of hilarious duo to see sort of evolve, because they might never win 40 games like as teammates together.
They're going to somehow have a worse year this year than they did last year.
And they're going to put up ridiculous numbers. Like it's kind of a, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like the Timberwolves before the Jimmy Butler trade, where it's like Wiggins, LaVine, Towns, like they're all really cool young players with like tons of pedigree, tons of athleticism and awesome numbers. And like none of them contribute to winning.
It's like Stafford and Megatron. Okay, last two. The worst move of the 2018 offseason was?
I'm going to say the Kevin Love extension.
I'm not going to fight you on that one.
I mean, what were the other, like, that one I kind of, I did a little bit of research and I kind of came across that one. I was like, oh, that one. Probably. Yep.
I think the Lakers letting Brook Lopez walk is up there. Probably not. It's not like egregious threat level midnight bad move, but not a great move. What else? I feel like for the most part, most of the moves that teams made were like generally reasonable.
I mean, there's a bunch of just kind of minor ones, like
Jabari Parker.
I was gonna say like that. Like I thought about that one. It's like, yeah, that was bad, but like in the grand scheme of things, yeah. Does that really?
Well, it's not like they signed him to a 5-year.
Yeah,
deal.
What does that do to the Bulls? Yeah, really. I mean, it was stupid. It looks bad now. But yeah, I think the Kevin Love one is just. You know, that's set your franchise back like 5 years level bad.
Yeah. I don't know if there's another one that's been that egregious. I mean, the Melo signing, short term bad, but really not going to have any long term effects. Flip side of that, best move of the 2018 offseason.
So I decided not to count the LeBron one. I know that.
Thank you.
It's just, it was such a clear foregone conclusion, and it really had nothing to do with like the Lakers being smart. You know, it was just like
Lakers saw something in LeBron and other teams.
All 30 teams want LeBron. He chooses the Lakers. I'm not going to give the Lakers credit for that. So I'm going to say the Kawhi Leonard trade by the Raptors, because I think that, you know, it's a super, super impactful, you know, like we just said, like top 7 player in the league. Mm-hmm. And they made a gamble, and it wasn't even like the players they gave up. Like, I think you could argue the DeRozan contract was not even a net positive in terms of just how you'd want to allocate your money if you're trying to win a title. So they get off of that. You know, Jakob Poeltl, clearly the lowest of their like 4 or 5 top young assets. And so they didn't have to give up a guy like Siakam or Anunoby. And then they kind of make a, so I mean, you probably just do it even if you know you're only getting him for 1 year, right? Mm-hmm. But I think that they also sort of were betting on, you know, Toronto's not a bad place to be an NBA player. Like, to be an NBA superstar, you can make a ton of money in endorsements there. It's a fun city, and it's a place where he can be the best player on a title, championship caliber team. And I think that if I were putting the odds right now, I think that there's at least like a 40-50% chance he re-signs there. So I think that is just the type of swing, and not every team had the type of setup that the Raptors have where they could have convinced him to stay to such a level. But I think that it was just such a awesome move by them to really kind of take what was going to be kind of a, yeah, this team's going to win 50 games, but we know it's not going to do anything in the playoffs, to all of a sudden this team might be the favorite to go to the finals.
It's kind of like a no news is good news scenario with Kawhi in Toronto in terms of keeping him. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's like, to me, like you would know by now if there were some issues, you know, like if he didn't like the fit of the city or the teammates or anything about the team. Like the fact that nothing has come out, I think, is just good for Toronto, as long as you don't have to address this, you know, and things go well on the court, just first in the East.
Yeah, it looks like a fun team to play on. I mean,
go ahead.
Well, like compare the caliber of players he's playing with now to like the teams he was playing with in San Antonio, where
it's just
like
freedom too.
Well, it's like him and like DeJounte Murray and maybe Danny Green are like the only like, you know, athletes really on those teams. Now he's just surrounded by young guys that are going to continue to get better around him. I mean, it's just such a more kind of appealing situation.
He's in the exact situation that every player in the league wants to be in, basically. I mean, it's the same situation that Kyrie is in. It's the same situation that Jimmy Butler wanted to be in. You want to be the best player on a really good team, which when you're Kawhi's a better player than Kyrie and Butler, mm-hmm. so it's a little bit easier for him to be the best player because there's maybe only four or five guys better than him. But someone like Kyrie, like, this is the exact situation you want. You want to have your own team, mm-hmm. but when there are 10 better players in the league than you, you know, it's tough to win. So you have to kind of find this perfect situation where you have a super deep roster that's really good, but no one is also better than you on that team.
It's the situation that Durant's going to be looking yes. for this offseason, and he's not going to really find one better than Toronto. Right. Like, Toronto, I mean, it's just the perfect situation for yep. a guy of Kawhi's caliber to step into. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they are so good that they can just continue to rest him on half of each back-to-back the rest of the way just to preserve him, because, like, why risk it, you know? Like, why, especially if you're trying to bring him back, like, the last thing you want to do is have him get hurt again on your watch. So they're good enough that they can probably get the one seed and be pretty diligent mm-hmm. about resting him.
So I think Kawhi's the right answer. Other candidates I would throw out there, the Bucks bringing in Lopez. The Bucks bringing in Connaughton, the Bucks bringing in Ersan, and the Bucks letting Jabari walk. That might be number
one.
Well,
that was their best move of the offseason, was right. letting. Because if they don't let Jabari walk, I don't think any of what's happening
no.
is happening.
No, exactly. Like, I'm only half kidding about that one. Like, them letting Jabari walk was a bigger deal than the Bulls bringing him in.
Right.
If that makes sense. That was a bigger positive for them, and it's a bigger negative for Chicago.
Where would you rank the Mavs trading up for Doncic?
I mean, it's certainly the right move. Like, it's very clear to me that Doncic is better than Trae Young, but it's not like Trae Young has been a complete disaster, and they mm-hmm. also gave up another pick. So I think it's going to end up looking okay. I still, in 10 years, I think we'll look back and say, wow, they probably should have kept Doncic, but I also don't think it's going to be like a complete fleecing.
Well, how about this? What's worse, the Kevin Love extension or the Kings passing on Doncic?
Kings passing on Doncic.
Okay, so I should have said
no matter
that.
What.
Yeah, I should have said that.
Yeah, then. That was pretty bad.
Because that I mean, the Kevin Love thing, like I said, it sets the franchise back 5 years. I mean, the passing on Doncic and mm-hmm. taking Bagley, I mean, that sets a franchise back yeah. like 12 years.
Well, a franchise that had already been set back. It started to just become exponential.
You had an opportunity, and Bagley's not contributing to this 9-8 Kings start. Like,
the Kings are like, they're playing for like 2035. They're all building toward that.
Well, they'll get the next Doncic.
Yep. A couple other underrated signings. I think Nick Stauskas in Portland has worked out about as well as that possibly could have worked out. Julius Randle, who had a triple-double last night.
I love that one.
He's been awesome. I mean, Mirotic was acquired last year, obviously, but mm-hmm. he's been incredible. He has like 15 double-doubles in a row. And then for those Kings, Bielitsa. I mean, Bielitsa is the one who's been huge for them. Mm-hmm. Bagley's contributing. I mean, he's playing like 20 minutes a night off the bench, but he's not contributing in the way that you would hope, given how this team has played.
Yeah, I mean, those are just not on that same yeah. sort of level, but very good moves.
All right, quick prospect stuff. We got Duke-Auburn tonight. Duke dismantled. Who did they play yesterday? We were watching that. San Diego State.
Yep.
They look pretty good. They're still good. Gonzaga plays Arizona. UWGB, the Phoenix, take on Bol Bol in Oregon. So a lot of prospects to watch. Hachimura, obviously, from Gonzaga. Bol at Oregon. The three guys from Duke. Auburn's a top 10 team, so this will be probably the toughest test that Duke will face, given mm-hmm. how the Kentucky game went. Nas Little, I think if you're a casual NBA fan, you probably haven't even heard about Nas Little yet, even though he's a projected top five pick because he's coming mm-hmm. off the bench still for UNC. I know you've kind of put together a preliminary top 15, and we don't have to dive into this, but if there are a few names that you want to pick out from there and highlight.
Yeah, do. I think the top four is pretty settled until further notice, and yep. might kind of stay settled for the next like 2 months. And I have Zion at the top spot now, RJ Barrett at number two, Nas Little at three, and Cam Reddish at four. I think that's just like, if the draft were today, I would take Zion first, but there's the, like, he can't really show the flaws that maybe we sort of thought might have been there over the rest of the season for that to kind of stay the case. Whereas like RJ Barrett's just a no doubt awesome pick. Like, you'd mm-hmm. love to get him into your organization. But Zion's just showing a level of two-way upside that I just didn't really see being there.
Does it matter who gets the number one pick? Do you think for those guys, like, are you looking at Zion on Barrett? Like, if you're Phoenix, you're like, ah, we don't need Barrett. We already have Booker. Like, is that a thought at all? Or you just
wouldn't they just as easily say we don't need Zion? We already have Ayton.
Like, well, I don't know. Be like, that's what I'm asking. Like, are both of these guys versatile enough that they can just fit?
Yeah.
Anywhere?
Well, that's yeah. So I don't think it might matter. Like, I think there probably will be unless Zion just kind of not only keeps this up, but maybe even gets to another gear and continues to get better. I could see that there being a case where Zion's number one on all 30 teams' boards if that happens. But most likely, there's going to be at least 7 or 8 teams that have one of them and not the other atop their board. So I think it matters in that sense. But both of them are just so easy to integrate. Yeah, like RJ Barrett,
we already have a 290-pound forward.
RJ Barrett might be the easiest draft prospect to integrate since Anthony Davis. Like, it's just you plug him in as you're 2, you're 3, you're 1. Like, it doesn't really matter. Right. Like, he's just out there on the wing. He's handling the ball. He's playing defense. He's shooting the ball. So, I mean, he's super easy to integrate. Zion, I think, you know, if he kind of reaches his peak, he's just the perfect modern-day 5. And he can fit next to, like, a bigger guy. He can fit next to a smaller guy. Like, I think that they're both just super easy to integrate. So I think it's just going to come down to preference and not need.
I think Zion Williamson is going to be the easiest sell to a fan base ever. Mm-hmm. Like, even, I mean, any fan, like, if the Knicks get the number
since one. Since LeBron, really.
Right? Yes, I agree.
That's going to be, because he's more famous now than any prospect was at this point in the calendar since LeBron.
Yeah, I don't even think it's close. I think Odin was a pretty big deal in, what was that, 07, 08?
I mean, Durant wasn't at this level. Probably wasn't even at this level in, like, March.
No. I mean, he was great, but that Texas team wasn't high profile enough. Like, they weren't the number one team in the country.
And he was just doing awesome stuff, but it was just you kind of needed to appreciate it on a different level than the Zion.
Well, he was the number two player in that class, but he wasn't. You know, the times were different back then. Like, nobody, there were not ubiquitous Kevin Durant highlights all over Twitter or whatever, MySpace at the time.
And, like, we've said, like, I think Zion, the last dunk, I mean, he's a better dunker than even Blake was, but, like, Blake was the last guy that was this good of a prospect and this good of a dunker.
Yes.
And, like, Zion's fame right now compared to any of Blake Griffin's college fame is just, it's not even comparable. So yeah, I mean, as soon as he gets into an organization, like, those jerseys are going to go crazy. They're going to sell a ton of tickets.
It's an easy sell. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking at other prospects in this range. Like, Romeo Langford is certainly someone to watch from Indiana. He's been a lot of fun so far. 6'6", can kind of do everything. Kevin Porter, similar body. I've watched him at USC. Reminds me a lot of Lance Stephenson, the way he plays. He's super athletic, super aggressive. Sometimes he crosses over so hard that he just, like, kind of falls over and stumbles. But then every now and then he has these plays that you're like, my God. Like, you very rarely see finishes like this, moves like this.
So we've already got, I think Kevin Porter, I think, is officially one of your guys.
Sure.
And
Bull's one of my guys, too.
Ja Morant from Murray State is officially one of my guys.
Yeah.
And we will continue to collect guys throughout the season.
Did you know there's another Luka in this draft?
I did not.
Luka Samanic.
Okay.
Samanic, excuse me. A forward from, looks like.
He sounds good.
Yeah, looks like he's playing in Greece. Olympia, that sounds Greek, right?
Yes. Yes, it
can
does.
Can we confirm? Yeah. I mean, we don't have to go in depth on any of these guys, but, you know, there's a lot of college basketball this weekend.
The thing I would look forward to, like, if you're listening to this, it's probably, might be Wednesday, might be Tuesday, but, like,
might be Thursday.
The Gonzaga-Duke game that will probably happen in the Maui Invitational, I don't think there's anything that, like, the Duke guys can really, you know, I mean, it'll just be fun to watch them, but Rui Hachimura for Gonzaga is kind of a fringe lottery pick right now, and if he shows well against Duke and their athleticism, then I think he could climb his way, you know, decisively into the top 10. If he just looks completely outmatched, then that's going to kind of have him tumbling down board. So I think this is a huge game for him, and just kind of whether he looks like he belongs in that mix with those guys or if he's just a clear tier or two below.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Darius Garland at Vanderbilt, you know, somebody that I'm sure college basketball fans and diehard draft people know about, but he's certainly someone to keep an eye on as well. It does seem like it's going to be a pretty deep lottery class, and then it's going to drop off quite a bit after 13, 14, 15-ish. But we'll see.
Yeah, and I almost think it might drop off after the top, like, eight. Now, I think you can say that it's deep, but I think that there's going to be warts that kind of emerge on some of these guys that maybe aren't there right now. I have Quentin Grimes ranked fifth just because I'm 100% confident that he will shoot for a high percentage from three. But like Romeo Langford and Keldon Johnson could jump ahead of him if they shoot well from three. Mm-hmm. But if we get to draft day and like Keldon Johnson shooting like 26% from three or Romeo Langford shooting 26% mm-hmm. from three, then all of a sudden those guys are more kind of in that like 8 to 14 range and maybe not in that same sort of tier as a guy like Grimes.
All right. We'll wrap this up. Have a fun Thanksgiving, James. I don't know what you have planned, but I'm sure it's going to be a good time.
It will be.
Are you traveling anywhere?
Going to Milwaukee to...
Milwaukee? Where's that?
My family's and my in-laws both live there, so...
Oh, good stuff.
Killing two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I'll be back in the greater Green Bay area. There's a local heavy metal band playing at a bar called the Slammer Inn again.
Nice.
Downtown Knightstown, so... If you want to come up and check that out, that's Saturday night.
A local heavy metal band.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.